We've got our next guest, listeners, who's lightning in a bottle, Lee Hedgman of the Barreled Bee, one of the very few people in the world aging honeys in barrels. But that's only like, given the surface of how complicated this woman and her business is. Lee, I don't even know where to start with you. There's so many questions I have. You started out as an expedition. You're native to Portland, which is one of my favorite places. It's nice and liberal, which I always loved. And it's a great food town. And it's not surprising that you should end up in food business. But what got you started with bees and honey, and particularly with aging honeys in barrels?
So I would honestly say it started from when I was in grad school, and I was actually a home brewer, and I made mead. So I was working with fermented honey 20-plus years ago, and that's kind of where it started. I ended up doing what I'm doing now was because I moved back to Portland with the intention of finishing my PhD and teaching, and then I decided that I wanted to be a brewer. Yes, every middle-aged woman's dream come true. I switched mid-gears in my 30s, and in my late 30s, actually, and decided I wanted to become take my home brewing hobby and take it professionally. So I started out as a brewer before I moved to working as a distiller, so going to spirits. And then midway through then, I was still home brewing. I was still making mead. I was still working with honey. And then I decided that I wanted to see what would happen. I asked the question, I wonder what would happen if I put a different kind of honey in a different in one of the barrels that I had. So I've spent the last 7 years answering that question, and every single barrel gives me a different answer.
Yeah, I read that too. That must be either exciting or discouraging. I'm not sure which.
It's like, oh, my goodness. It's like asking a toddler to tell you the truth, and they're giving you 70 different stories. Every single barrel gives me a different story, and I love it. It's been fun. But that's how I started out. I mean, I literally spend my days making liquor, putting things in barrels, taking stuff out of barrels, smelling, tasting, blending. So that's what I was able to do with honey. I still get to do that because I don't know if you know this, but there are over 300 different honey varietals in the United States alone.
No,
and
I didn't know that.
Those flavor profiles change based off of where you are in the world. It's one of the few things, like wine, where terroir matters. The ground, the earth, what's growing, the seasons change. So it's very, very much in touch with weather. So everything changes, and I love that about being able to take different honey varietals and kind of pair them with all these different kinds of barrels, because depending on what we do to these barrels, we're going to get different flavor profiles out of them.
Now, give our listeners an idea of, when you say the different kinds of barrels, what does that mean? Does it mean they're bourbon barrels, or they Scotch whiskey barrels, or are they champagne bottles?
So I have worked with port barrels. I've worked with whiskey. I've worked with gin, bourbon. I had a Sazerac style barrel.
Sure, right.
A Sazerac. That's Peter's favorite drink.
Oh my goodness! It did the craziest thing to the honey I put in it. It was really unexpected. It was probably the weirdest, barrel aging. It was buckwheat honey, which is very dark, very kind of farmyard, very earthy. I like to call it. Some people call it stinky.
What's it called?
I put buckwheat.
Loveweed.
Buckwheat?
Buckwheat.
Okay. Yeah. And
okay.
So I put that in there, and it tasted like salted black licorice. when it came out. And it was and there was no salt added. It was the craziest thing. It was something that I had never expected would happen to that. And I'm not a fan of black licorice, salted or otherwise, but it completely blew me away. So that's been the biggest surprise. Usually I can kind of get an idea of what's going to happen, but sometimes I'm just completely blown away.
No, when you say aging, you're talking months in these barrels,
I am
right?
Talking months, yes. So they'll spend anywhere between 4 to 12 months in barrel, depending on what I'm making.
I'll be darned. Now, I mean, there aren't many people doing this in the country, let alone in the world, right?
Right. I can count five. there are a lot of people who do some version of it, and it's usually an apiary that does maybe one barrel, or there might be a distillery that they happen to have bees, and so they'll do that there. I love to do tasting, and I love to do blending, so there isn't anyone who does, like, very intentionally chooses barrels to kind of craft a flavor profile that both complements and accentuates both what the barrel character can give, but also what the honey varietal will provide.
Now, there's quite, as I recall, there's quite a cottage industry in the production of liquor in the Portland area. Am I right?
Yeah.
Is that still going on?
The production of liquor? Cottage?
Spirit.
It's pretty big here. It's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say mid-range. I mean, it's never going to be huge, large. The space, the amount, it's never going to be like it is in the South. We just don't have the capacity for it.
Mm-hmm.
And to build that kind of, like, that land, there's a lot more of a history for it in the South than there is here. I think that what's unique about the Pacific Northwest, and especially Portland and Oregon in general, is that a lot of them are craft distilleries, so they're very small, very batch-oriented.
Mm-hmm. I can't. Who did we just interview from Portland, Rapid?
We interviewed someone who was the lady who makes.
Oh, she makes. Yeah, what does she make? She makes something. Popcorn. Popcorn.
I'm not sure if. Yeah, I think it might be popcorn.
Yeah. All kinds of flavors of popcorn. Miss
Hannah?
Popcorn.
Miss Hannah, yes.
There you go. That's who it is.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very good.
I love them.
Yeah. She's really sharp. So, now, I mean, I have to ask, Liz, if you do all this experimenting, there's probably not a huge amount of always the same to offer people. How do you handle that from a marketing perspective if people want to repeat an experience and they can't? How do you handle that?
I started the business doing single barrel releases, and
okay. It
was going to just be just a single barrel. Often, at most, it would be two barrels, but I like just doing, I like the uniqueness of it. And most people who know that I do barrel releases, I now do only three single barrel releases a year, but I also have other products that use honey and that use barrel-aged honey as a part of the product base. So when I started, I only did barrel-aged honey. Now I have a wide range of products. So the folks
I was going to get to that because I was.
Oh,
I
yeah.
told you I was read. I was reading all about bee. What is bee? You know, you take it like to relieve pain and inflammation and stuff like that. Serum. Bee serum.
Yes.
Yeah. And your mother thought of that. You said on your website.
No. I don't think, no.
You haven't
I actually
read
don't
your
work
website.
With bee venom. Yes. I don't actually work with bee venom.
Bee venom, that's it, right? Yeah. This runs through some of these products, just to give our listeners an idea of the range of your company and how freewheeling you are. That's the first thing I noticed. You seem to be totally unconstrained with all this.
I've had to work on that. I have a notebook now that I write all of my ideas in, and I am not allowed to do a new product until I basically nail down an existing one. So that is
really
a new product or a treat for myself.
Who holds you to task on all that?
Actually, I have several good friends, and I have several good business mentors who go, that sounds like a great idea. Why don't you put that away for like 6 months and then we'll deal with the task at hand? And I go, oh, yeah, you're right. But I knew when I started that I could not maintain 3 barrels a year, which only yield about 350 to 400 bottles, which I still do them. But those, by the way, are already sold, usually are already sold before they even leave the barrel and get packaged.
Really?
I have certain companies that just buy them.
You understand
they know they're coming
business, though. I mean, there are a lot of people who are very creative who don't understand business. You also understand business. Is that from your mentorship?
That's from the mentorship. That's from trial and error, but it's also from the fact that I've worked in the liquor industry for a while, and liquor is probably one of the most beautifully packaged but also high-priced time, a lot of the things that factor into how you kind of create an image and what people want and see. And wine does that as well. People wait all year for a certain vintage because they know they're going to do a vertical. They're going to buy a case so that 10 years from now, they're going to open up a dozen bottles each from every year so you can go through that tasting. So it's very similar. A lot of the things that I drawn from those industries.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Your signature is the B sticks. Could you explain what those are?
So one of the products I make, this is actually my pandemic project. 2020, so much fun. I was working as a distiller, and I wanted a new product that was kind of what I could do in a vacuum because we weren't going anywhere, but I was still making hand sanitizer, actually, at the time.
Well, that's a good, very good brain and business brain in doing that during the pandemic.
It was a pivot we needed to – we just ran out, so we needed to do it. So I was making that, but I wanted something fun. And so my goal was to make a cocktail – but in a honey stick form. And so they're called buzz sticks. So I work with local distilleries, and I take their spirits, and I take their signature cocktail, and then I actually deconstruct that and try to put those same flavor profiles into a honey stick form. So it's actually a boozy buzzy. It's a boozy honey stick.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what are you supposed to do with them? What did we do with them? I don't remember what we did with them. Did you put them on your cereal, Peter?
I did. You put everything on them. I put them on toast. I put them on tea, coffee, ice cream. We did one. Sometimes I put them in hot chocolate. Because I keep a box in my purse usually, sometimes when I'm out and about, I will be somewhere in a restaurant, and I'll think to myself, I wonder what this would taste like with a honey stick on it. And so I will literally pull them out of my purse and be like, all right, this needs something, a little added sweetness, you know, or I'm just getting the sandwich. So I've never found anything that they didn't work on. I put them on soups. They work really well with savory cream soups. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you were going to tell us about some of your different products, and I picked that one out because we have samples of it, and I found them curious on, but I was fascinated by the packaging of them, actually, too. You spent a lot of time figuring out packaging.
Yes. I'm no graphic designer, but I kind of know what I like to look at. So that's been fun. I say the other packaging, the other products are my Honey Buzz barbecue sauce, and then I have this spicy ketchup.
What is different about your barbecue sauce?
Oh, there are a couple of things. I spent a couple of months with a spreadsheet and a Google search looking at so many different barbecue sauce recipes.
There are
and what
millions
I found
out
was that there are so many. And it's all regional, too. So it depends on what your base is going to be. And so I was, like, looking and going, okay. I looked at all the spices, and a lot of them have the same spices that everybody uses. And I love those, but I also wanted something different. I wanted something that could be used not just for barbecue, for meat, but also for, like, vegetables or in sauces or whatever. And so I went with spice components that would layer well and would taste different depending on what you're using it with. So the barbecue sauce has got cardamom in it, and it has cold brew coffee. So I work with
what?
A local
cold brew coffee.
Yes. So it gives it that really nice kind of I worked with a really good local coffee roaster. So we were checking out the pH. We wanted flavor. We wanted some nice chocolate notes that would work well with, like, a smoky character that would kind of give it that little bit of a push.
I mean, I know a lot of brilliant chefs that have come up with coffee flavors to go with beef, for example. I mean, that seems to be a natural combination that people have explored. And you know, you don't really think of coffee as a sauce flavor, but that's what a lot of people have hit on. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah. So it's got a lot. It does a lot of heavy lifting in some ways as far as a flavor component without actually adding those other flavors to it. And I really enjoyed that one. Sumac is actually in it. I think it's actually on the label. Sorry. Sumac. The spice
sumac.
Is in the
That's
barbecue.
That's become very popular. I have yet to understand about sumac. I mean, for somebody who's a lifelong food critic, it seems a little silly. But there's so many different parts of it and how to use it.
It gives a lot of different flavor components that I really enjoyed. And so, but the key to a good barbecue sauce is always going to be the base. And what I disliked about a lot of commercial ones was that when you use too many different kinds of sugars, you get really uneven caramelization. So if you're roasting or baking, cane sugar, molasses, honey, beet sugar, all those different kind of sugars will kind of caramelize at different temperatures, and so you'll get uneven. And I really loved using honey, and so honey was really important, which is why I decided to go with the bourbon barrel-aged honey to sweeten, because I really liked the one to bring in that kind of smoky roast character.
It would be good on bacon, huh? Beef bacon.
That's
try beef bacon.
Yeah.
Write that in your book. Bacon with
I mean, bacon is good by itself, but anything with bacon is delicious. Chocolate and bacon is delicious.
Oh, chocolate, yeah. The popcorn lady we interviewed from Portland, actually, I don't have a sweet tooth, so I didn't think I'd like this chocolate drizzled popcorn at all. It was fabulous. It turns out to be a big seller for her. I mean, which is another question I had: who buys your products? I mean, how widespread is it, and how do you get your products?
So it depends on what they are, but usually wineries, distilleries will buy them. A couple of bars really like a lot of the sauces and the ketchups. I'm just now getting into stores, but everyday people buy them. I actually. I started doing farmers markets, and people really enjoy, they enjoy them. They want to know what to do with them.
Yeah. So you go to that big, wonderful farmers market in Portland, huh?
There are several big ones, but the Portland State one is probably one of the nicer ones, and I have not done that one that last year. I'm going to do it this year.
Yeah, it's wondrous. I'm amazed. I mean, we've been to a lot of farmers market, but that one's really special.
Nope.
So, I mean, do you have an online e-commerce audience too?
I do. I'm on Instagram, so I post things, and so I have an online store, and really working to like get folks from all over to kind of taste it. So we send out samples. I have friends who buy for other people in other cities, and they send it to them as gifts. And so getting the word out there, and if people want more, then they just find me online.
Okay.
Is it what state of Washington or the state of Oregon or both that has a limitation on how liquor can be sold or bought?
So Oregon does.
Oregon does.
Oregon,
I mean, does that get in the way?
So it does and it doesn't. It does for the buzz sticks because those can only be sold in liquor stores here in Oregon.
Oh,
but
wow.
If your state allows for sales, then you can go ahead and then I can sell them in Washington and whatnot. It becomes so I have a liquor license. one of the things I needed to have because I actually use distilled spirits in making some of the products, so I have to have that license. And I have a license to buy. So buy a lot of alcohol.
You have the honey buzz barbecue sauce. You have the oat honey spicy ketchup. You have the butt sticks, bourbon lemonade, Abby's chocolate martini, 5-flavor sample packs, coffee sour spice honey bee, bourbon lemonade, Abby's chocolate martini, and honey lemon drop. Is that like a lozenge?
No, it's actually like it's a gin cocktail.
Oh, is it really? I'll be darned.
Yeah, so it's more like almost like a bee's knees. It's based on a cocktail that we made at Freeland when I worked there. I worked for Freeland Spirits. I was a distiller. And it was one of the cocktails that we made. So I really enjoyed that one. It uses gin.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted cocktails that use each of the spirits that I really enjoy.
What's your next move?
My next move, actually just to get the word out, to get into more, to make it more accessible for people to purchase products from me. And this summer, I have some syrups coming out.
Dessert?
Syrup.
That's a natural, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a natural in terms of production, but it's a natural in flavor, I guess.
Oh, yes.
And how do you add these things on? I mean, you are an academician, so how do you get all this hands-on making experience? How are people?
I have a lot of hobbies. And I started out making booze at home. Strangely enough, I don't like to cook, but I do like to eat. So,
that is a problem.
I don't
yes.
like to cook. I do like to eat, but I can cook. My college roommate was like, she would cook, I would clean, because I didn't have the patience for it. But I have a really great palate, I will say that, and I really like flavor combinations. So in order to kind of bring to the world the things that I think of in my head, I actually have to spend time in the kitchen making them. And so that's what I do. I pick up a dozen different hobbies, and sometimes they carry over in different ways.
Well, I mean, you're somebody to watch. Listeners, keep an eye on this brand, because this is going to be It's going to be moving at record speed here. Again, it's the Barreled Bee out of Portland, Oregon. And if you're experimenting with things, if you're interested in new and exciting kinds of products, keep an eye on this. You never know what's going to come out of Lee Hedgemon's mind and notebook.
Have you ever been in contact with Julian, who owns the Van Winkle?
No.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
I don't.
His bourbon is probably the most sought after in the whole world. And his first name is Julian, sweetheart. What's his last name?
I don't know who you're talking about, honey.
The man who served only his booze at that.
Oh yeah. All right, you caught me off guard.
Poppy
Van Winkle.
Oh, Poppy Van Winkle, yes. So I have heard of that, and I actually have a bottle. I have it.
Yeah, you're lucky to have it.
Just the bottle, it is empty. No, I have just the bottle, it's empty.
There you go.
But I have had the spirit itself.
I mean, why rush at it, right? Why not take your time over it?
Yeah. Well, it's been a real eye-opener to talk to you, Lee, and an eye-opener to encounter the Barreled Bee, something I never quite envisioned I'd be stumbling onto. In fact, I don't even know how we found you, but we did. And it certainly was serendipitous.
It was a happy accident.
It was certainly a happy accident. And I wish you continued success and much expansion. And,
thank you so much.
Yeah, keep it posted on what you do next. I'm sure it's going to be exciting.
I will. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. We've got our next guest, listeners, who's lightning in a bottle, Lee Hedgemon of the Barreled Bee, one of the very few people in the world aging honeys in barrels, but that's only like given the surface of how complicated this woman and her business is. Lee, I don't even know where to start with you. There's so many questions I have. You started out as an academician. You're native to Portland, which is one of my favorite places. It's nice and liberal, which I always loved. And it's a great food town. And it's not surprising that you should end up in food business. But what got you started with bees and honey, and particularly with aging honeys in barrels?
So it started from when I was in grad school, and I was actually a home brewer, and I made mead. So I was working with fermented honey 20-plus years ago, and that's kind of where it started. I ended up doing what I'm doing now is because I moved back to Portland with the intention of finishing my PhD and teaching, and then I decided that I wanted to be a brewer. Yes, every middle-aged woman's dream come true. I switched mid-gears in my 30s and in my late 30s, actually, and decided I wanted to become take my home brewing hobby and take it professionally. So I started out as a brewer before I moved to working as a distiller, so going to spirits. And then midway through then, I was still home brewing. I was still making mead. I was still working with honey. And then I decided that I wanted to see what would happen. I asked the question, I wonder what would happen if I put a different kind of honey in one of the barrels that I had. So uh-huh. that I've spent the last 7 years answering that question, and every single barrel gives me a different answer.
Yeah, I read that too. That must be either exciting or discouraging. I'm not sure which.
It's like, oh my goodness. It's like asking a toddler to tell you the truth and they're giving you 70 different stories. Every single barrel gives me a different story, and I love it. It's been fun. But that's how I started out. I mean, I literally spend my days making liquor, putting things in barrels, taking stuff out of barrels, smelling, tasting, blending. So that's what I was able to do with honey. I still get to do that because I don't know if you know this, but there are over 300 different honey varietals in the United States alone.
No,
and
I didn't know that.
That's, those flavor profiles change based off of where you are in the world. It's one of the few things, like wine, where terroir matters. The ground, the earth, what's growing, the seasons change. So it's very, very much in touch with weather. So everything changes, and I love that about being able to take different honey varietals and kind of pair them with all these different kinds of barrels, because depending on what we do to these barrels, we're going to get different flavor profiles out of them.
Now, give our listeners an idea of, when you say the different kinds of barrels, what does that mean? Does it mean they're bourbon barrels, or they Scotch whiskey barrels, or are they champagne bottles?
So I have worked with port barrels. I've worked with whiskey. I've worked with gin, bourbon. I had a Sazerac style barrel.
Oh, sure, right.
It's Sazerac. That's Peter's favorite drink.
Oh my goodness! It did the craziest thing to the honey I put in it. It was really unexpected. It was probably the weirdest, barrel aging. It actually it was buckwheat honey, which is very dark, very kind of farmyard, very earthy. I like to call it. Some people call it stinky.
What's it called?
I put buckwheat.
Loveweed.
Buckwheat?
Buckwheat.
Okay. Yeah. And
okay.
So I put that in there, and it tasted like salted black licorice
when it
came out. And it was and there was no salt added. It was the craziest thing. It was something that I had never expected would happen to that. And I'm not a fan of black licorice, salted or otherwise, but it completely blew me away. So that's been the biggest surprise. Usually I can kind of get an idea of what's going to happen, but sometimes I'm just completely blown away.
Now, when you say aging, you're talking months in these barrels,
I am
right?
Talking months, yes. So they'll spend anywhere between 4 to 12 months in barrel, depending on what I'm making.
I'll be darned. Now, I mean, there aren't many people doing this in the country, let alone in the world, right?
Right. I can count 5. there are a lot of people who do some version of it, and it's usually an apiary that does maybe one barrel, or there might be a distillery that they happen to have bees, and so they'll do that there. I love to do tasting, and I love to do blending, so there isn't anyone who does, like, very intentionally chooses barrels to kind of craft a flavor profile that both complements and accentuates both what the barrel character can give, but also what the honey varietal will provide.
Now, there's quite a cottage industry in the production of liquor in the Portland area. Am I right?
Yeah.
Is that still going on?
The production of liquor, cottage,
spirit.
It's pretty big here. It's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say mid-range. I mean, it's never going to be huge, large. The space, the amount, it's never going to be like it is in the South. We just don't have the capacity for it.
Mm-hmm.
And to build that kind of, like, that land, there's a lot more of a history for it in the South than there is here. I think that what's unique about the Pacific Northwest, and especially Portland and Oregon in general, is that a lot of them are craft distilleries, so they're very small, very batch oriented.
I can't. Who did we just interview from Portland, Rapid?
We interviewed someone who was it the lady who makes.
Oh, she makes. Yeah, what does she make? She makes something. Popcorn. Popcorn.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it might be popcorn.
Yeah. All kinds of flavors of popcorn. Miss Hannah? Popcorn.
Miss Hannah, yes.
There you go. That's who it is.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very good.
I love them.
Yeah. She's really sharp. So, now, I mean, I have to ask, Liz, if you do all this experimenting, there's probably not a huge amount of always the same to offer people. How do you handle that from a marketing perspective if people want to repeat an experience and they can't? How do you handle that?
I started the business doing single barrel releases, and
okay. It
was going to just be just a single barrel. Often, at most, it would be two barrels, but I like the uniqueness of it. And most people who know that I do barrel releases, I now do only three single barrel releases a year. But I also have other products that use honey and that use barrel-aged honey as a part of the product base. So when I started, I only did barrel-aged honey. Now I have a wide range of products. So the folks who love
I was going to get to that because I was told you I was reading all about you take it like to relieve pain and inflammation and stuff like that. Serum. Bee serum.
Yeah.
And your mother thought of that, you said, on your website.
No. I don't think so.
You haven't
read
your website.
I actually don't work with bee venom. Yes. I don't actually work with bee venom.
Bee venom, that's it, right? Yeah. This runs through some of these products just to give our listeners an idea of the range of your company and how freewheeling you are. That's the first thing I noticed. You seem to be totally unconstrained with all this.
I've had to work on that. I have a notebook now that I write all of my ideas in, and I am not allowed to do a new product until I basically nail down an existing one. So that is
really
a new product or a treat for myself.
Who holds you to task on all that?
Actually, I have several good friends, and I have several good business mentors who go, that sounds like a great idea. Why don't you put that away for like 6 months and then we'll deal with the task at hand? And I go, oh, yeah, you're right. But I knew when I started that I could not maintain three barrels a year, which only yield about 350 to 400 bottles, which I still do them. But those, by the way, are already sold. Usually are already sold before they even leave the barrel and get packaged.
Really?
I have certain companies that just buy them.
You understand
they know they're coming
business, though. I mean, there are a lot of people who are very creative who don't understand business. You also understand business. Is that from your mentorship?
That's from the mentorship. That's from trial and error, but it's also from the fact that I've worked in the liquor industry for a while, and liquor is probably one of the most beautifully packaged but also high-priced time, a lot of the things that factor into how you kind of create an image and what people want and see. And wine does that as well. People wait all year for a certain vintage because they know they're going to do a vertical. They're going to buy a case so that 10 years from now, they're going to open up a dozen bottles each from every year so you can go through that tasting. So It's very similar. A lot of the things that I draw on, drawn from those industries.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Your signature is the B sticks. Could you explain what those are?
So one of the products I make, this is actually my pandemic project. 2020, so much fun. I was working as a distiller, and I wanted a new product that was kind of what I could do in a vacuum because we weren't going anywhere, but I was still making hand sanitizer, actually, at the time.
Well, that's a good, very good brain and business brain in doing that during the pandemic.
It was a pivot we needed to. We just ran out, so we needed to do it. So I was making that, but I wanted something fun, and so my goal was to make a cocktail, but in a honey stick form, and so they're called buzz sticks. So I work with local distilleries, and I take their spirits, and I take their signature cocktail. And then I actually deconstruct that and try to put those same flavor profiles into a honey stick form. So it's actually a boozy buzzy. It's a boozy honey stick.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what are you supposed to do with them? What did we do with them? I don't remember what we did with them. Did you put them on your cereal, Peter?
I did. You put everything on them. I put them on toast. I put them on tea, coffee, ice cream. We did one. Sometimes I put them in hot chocolate. Because I keep a box in my purse usually, sometimes when I'm out and about, I will be somewhere in a restaurant, and I'll think to myself, I wonder what this would taste like with a honey stick on it. And so I will literally pull them out of my purse and be like, all right, this needs something, a little added sweetness, you know, or I'm just getting the sandwich. So I've never found anything that they didn't work on. I put them on soups. They work really well with savory cream soups. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you were going to tell us about some of your different products, and I picked that one out because we have we got samples of it, and I found them curious on them. I was fascinated by the packaging of them, actually, too. You spent a lot of time figuring out packaging.
Ah, yes. I'm no graphic designer, but I kind of know what I like to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun. I say the other products are my Honey Buzz barbecue sauce, and then I have this spicy ketchup.
What is different about your barbecue sauce?
Oh, there are a couple of things. I spent a couple of months with a spreadsheet and a Google search, looking at so many different barbecue sauce recipes.
There
are so many. And it's all regional, too. So it depends on what your base is going to be. And so I was, like, looking and going, okay. I looked at all the spices, and a lot of them have the same spices that everybody uses. And I love those, but I also wanted something different. I wanted something that could be used not just for barbecue, for meat, but also for, like, vegetables or in sauces or whatever. And so I went with spice components that would layer well and would taste different depending on what you're using it with. So the barbecue sauce has got cardamom in it, and it has cold brew coffee. So I work with
what? Cold brew coffee.
Yes.
Be darned.
So it gives it that really nice kind of, I worked with a really good local coffee roaster. So we were checking out the pH. We wanted flavor. We wanted some nice chocolate notes that would work well with, like, a smoky character that would kind of give it that little bit of a push.
I know a lot of brilliant chefs that have come up with coffee flavors to go with beef, for example. I mean, that seems to be a natural combination that people have explored. You don't really think of coffee as a sauce flavor, but that's what a lot of people have hit on. You know, you're right.
Oh, yeah. It does it does a lot of heavy lifting in some ways as far as a flavor component without actually adding those other flavors to it. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that one. There was, Jason, sumac is actually in it. I think it's
sumac?
Actually on the label. So I sumac.
The spice sumac.
Is in the
That's
barbecue.
Become
yeah.
very popular. I have yet to understand about sumac. I mean, for somebody who's a lifelong food critic, it seems a little silly. But there's so many different parts of it and how to use it.
It gives a lot of different flavor components that I really enjoyed. And so, but the key to a good barbecue sauce is always going to be the base. And what I disliked about a lot of commercial ones was that when you use too many different kinds of sugars, you get really uneven caramelization. Roasting or baking, cane sugar, molasses, honey, beet sugar, all those different kind of sugars will kind of caramelize at different temperatures. And so you'll get uneven. And I really loved using honey, and so honey was really important, which is why I decided to go with the bourbon barrel-aged honey to sweeten, because I really liked the one to bring in that kind of smoky roast character.
It would be good on bacon, huh? Beef bacon. Try beef bacon.
Yeah.
Write that in your book. Beef bacon with it.
I mean, bacon is good by itself, but anything with bacon is delicious. Chocolate and bacon is delicious.
Oh, chocolate, yeah. The popcorn lady we interviewed from Portland, I don't have a sweet tooth, so I didn't think I'd like this chocolate drizzled popcorn at all. It was fabulous. It turns out to be a big seller for her. I mean, which is another question I had. Who buys your products? I mean, how widespread is it? I mean, how do you get your products?
So it depends on what they are, but usually wineries, distilleries will buy them. A couple of bars really like a lot of the sauces and the ketchups. I'm just now getting into stores, but everyday people buy them. I started doing farmers markets, and people really enjoy them. They want to know what to do with them.
Yeah. So you go to that big, wonderful farmer's market in Portland, huh?
There are several big ones, but the Portland State one is probably one of the nicer ones, and I have not done that one that last year. I'm going to do it this year.
Yeah, it's wondrous. I'm amazed. I mean, we've been to a lot of farmer's market, but that one's really special.
Nope.
So, I mean, do you have an online e-commerce audience, too?
I do. I'm on Instagram, so I post things, and so I have an online store, and really working to like get folks from all over to kind of taste it. So we send out samples. I have friends who buy for other people in other cities, and they send it to them as gifts. And so getting the word out there, and if people want more, then they just find me online.
Okay.
Is it what state of Washington or the state of Oregon or both that has a limitation on how liquor can be sold or bought?
So Oregon does.
Oregon does.
Oregon,
I mean, does that get in the way?
So it does and it doesn't. It does for the buzz sticks because those can only be sold in liquor stores here in Oregon.
Oh,
but
wow.
If your state allows for sales, then you can go ahead and then I can sell them in Washington and whatnot. It becomes so I have a liquor license. one of the things I needed to have because I actually use distilled spirits in making some of the products, so I have to have that license. And I have a license to buy. So buy a lot of alcohol.
You have the honey buzz barbecue sauce. You have the oat honey spicy ketchup. You have the buzz sticks, bourbon lemonade, Abby's chocolate martini, 5 flavor sample packs, coffee sour spice honey bee, bourbon lemonade, Abbey's chocolate martini, and honey lemon drop. Is that like a lozenge?
No, it's actually like it's a gin cocktail.
Oh, is it really? I'll be darned.
Yeah, so it's more like almost like a bee's knees. It's based on a cocktail that we made at Freeland when I worked there. I worked for Freeland Spirits. I was a distiller, and it was one of the cocktails that we made. So I really enjoyed that one. It uses gin. So I wanted cocktails that use each of the spirits that I really enjoy.
What's your next move?
My next move, actually just to get the word out, to get into more, to make it more accessible for people to purchase products from me. And this summer, I have some syrups coming out.
Dessert?
Syrup.
That's a natural, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a natural in terms of production, but it's a natural in flavor, I guess.
Oh, yes.
And how do you add these things on? I mean, you are an academician, so how do you get all this hands-on making experience? How are people?
I have a lot of hobbies. And I started out making booze at home. Strangely enough, I don't like to cook, but I do like to eat. So,
that is a problem.
I don't
yes.
like to cook. I do like to eat, but I can cook. My college roommate was like, she would cook, I would clean, because I didn't have the patience for it. But I have a really great palate, I will say that, and I really like flavor combinations. So in order to kind of bring to the world the things that I think of in my head, I actually have to spend time in the kitchen making them. And so that's what I do. I pick up a dozen different hobbies, and sometimes they carry over in different ways.
Well, I mean, you're somebody to watch. Listeners, keep an eye on this brand, because it's going to be moving at record speed here. Again, it's the Barreled Bee out of Portland, Oregon. And if you're experimenting with things, if you're interested in new and exciting kinds of products, keep an eye on this. You never know what's going to come out of Lee Hedgemon's mind and notebook.
Have you ever been in contact with Julian, who owns the Van Winkle?
No.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
I don't.
His bourbon is probably the most sought after in the whole world. And his first name is Julian, sweetheart. What's his last name?
I don't know who you're talking about, honey.
The man who served only his booze at that.
Oh yeah. All right, you caught me off guard.
Poppy Van Winkle.
Yes. So I have heard of that, and I actually have a bottle. I have it.
You're lucky to have it.
The bottle is empty. No, I have just the bottle. It's empty.
There you go.
But I have had the spirit itself.
I mean, why rush at it, right? Why not take your time over it?
Yeah. Well, it's been a real eye-opener to talk to you, Lee, and an eye-opener to encounter the Barreled Bee, something I never quite envisioned I'd be stumbling onto. In fact, I don't even know how we found you, but we did. And it certainly was serendipitous.
It was a happy accident.
It was certainly a happy accident. And I wish you continued success and much expansion. And,
thank you so much.
Keep us posted on what you do next. I'm sure it's going to be exciting.
I will. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Oh, we're talking to Tam Chuong, and I have to tell you from Tam's suites, why didn't somebody think of doing a soft brittle before you? It was, what a relief.
I know, right? You know, that's kind of one of the things I hear a lot, is why, where has this been?
Well, yeah, and it's just tell us a little bit. How old is this company?
So my company, Tam Suites, has actually started in 2019, and the brittle portion of it has only been about a year old. Actually, January is our anniversary date when we started rolling it out and offering it to the public. But Tam Suites really started because, you know, being Vietnamese, my background is Vietnamese. I came over here to the States, immigrated when I was only about 2 and a half, and my mother, a single mom, fled Vietnam with myself and my brother. We came on a boat, and after about a year in a refugee camp, we came here to Oregon. And being in the States, you know, it's such a different environment. Being in the States and being raised Vietnamese, my palate was much different than what was common here in the U.S. Being from Southeast Asia, most of our desserts weren't very sweet whatsoever.
Right.
But, yeah, so growing up here, though, most everything is really sweet because we have a sweet tooth here in the U.S., and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a little bit different. But, you know, I've always loved baking as a child. It's just something that really brought me joy. But I never really had time for it as an adult. And so it wasn't until I actually had children of my own. I wanted to be able to provide them, you know, the things I didn't have as a kid, such as birthday parties. Birthday parties now are just so elaborate. You have these fancy cakes. But what I noticed when I started throwing these parties for them is that I would order these cakes from these bakeries, but nobody actually really ate the cake. It was beautiful. I mean, so much work was put into it. But it was just too sweet, right, especially for my palate. And so when my daughter was older, about 7 years old, I actually decided to make my own birthday cake for her. And so that's kind of how Tam Suites got started. Yeah, I started making birthday cakes, and these are custom cakes. My friends and family loved it. They started ordering from me. And so I started posting my cakes onto Instagram.
And how old were you?
How old was I? Let's see, so this was 2019, so about, where are we, 20, 24, 5 years ago? So I was about 40. So I had kids late.
When I think of Portland, Oregon and food, one of the things that springs to mind first is food trucks.
Yes,
there are food
trucks
everywhere.
We are well-known. Yes, and we are not only are we well known for food trucks, but we're also well known for the food trucks that do so well that they actually open up a brick and mortar. And so we have like famous chefs now that started from a food truck who now have their own restaurant and who've now been, you know, have had a lot of press and who've won awards. So that's the fun thing about Portland.
Yeah, well, there's so many good chefs, quality food. In Portland, it's very spoiling, actually.
It is.
It's really very, it's exotic and compared to towns that size, any place else. You know, it's just so unique. Yeah.
This, by the way, my recollection, sweetheart, is that the first restaurant we went to of the new wave, if you like, in Portland was Higgins, Greg Higgins.
Oh, that was a long time ago, yeah.
It was a long time ago. It was the beginning of Portland as a food town.
Yeah, Greg Higgins, I remember that, yeah. The one I always think of is, who was the one that we had the photograph taken at a reception, And both of us were half crocked. Do you remember that? Who was that chef?
Do you remember? You're talking about the chef from... It was a restaurant that had a bird name. What was it called?
I can't remember. Yeah, but it was,
I wish I could remember everything.
But it was the thing that stands out in my mind is that it's such a great food community there. Everybody helping everybody else.
Yeah. So that was...
So started making cakes then, huh?
Absolutely. I started making cakes, and a story producer actually found me on Instagram and saw all the cakes I had made and recommended I apply for a Food Network competition that was all related to desserts and cake. So my friends and family, you know, encouraged me to do it, but I'm not really one to be on television, and I was so new into it. I had only been making cakes for about a year. But, you know, last minute I decided to apply, and I actually got on. So I competed on a Food Network competition.
Oh, wow.
It was called a Great Chocolate Showdown, and it was all centered around chocolate. And so it was the show that introduced me to candy. And
okay.
So once I came back from the show, yes, I started to experiment with candy. And so that's kind of how the Soft Brittle came about. Is in Vietnam, we actually have our own peanut brittle, and we have a sesame brittle. But if you can imagine that this brittle was about the size of like a standard Lego block, and it was hard as probably a Lego block. And so I wanted to, you know, try and create a candy that really represented my palate, for something that wasn't as sweet, but still really, you know, gave you that brittle feel, that nostalgia, that when you bite into it, a lot of memories come back, right, when you eat into a brittle. But not as hard.
As long as you're careful not to break your teeth.
Well, you know,
I
found even with your brittle, there is this hesitation. You put it in your mouth, and you kind of hesitate because you're expecting it to break your teeth. And then it turns out to be soft, and it's wonderful because all the flavors come through. So, no, we really enjoyed it. And the your flavorings are so sophisticated.
Thank you. You know, that's really my goal, is to, you know, go beyond tradition and represent some flavors into a candy that you wouldn't expect. And also, you know, to really accentuate the flavors of the nuts, because that's what you don't get in a traditional brittle. Most traditional brittles is sugar and butter, and then you throw in your whole nuts, whereas this, I add a nut butter to it, and so you get that nice nutty flavor throughout. And it's not as sweet as you would expect for a candy. And what's also nice is because of that shortbread cookie-like crumble, it goes beyond just a candy. You can add it over ice cream, over yogurt. You can add it to a charcuterie board, so you get that sweet and savory combination.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, if you're going to put it over ice cream, what do you do with it?
Oh, you just crumble it. Or you just take a piece and use it like a spoon, right? To scoop your ice cream and take
a
bite. Yeah. And, you know, another thing, too, is have you ever eaten s'mores? You know, s'mores,
yes,
you have your graham cracker, your marshmallow, and your chocolate. Well, imagine replacing that graham cracker with a piece of brittle. A piece of the soft brittle. That just takes it to another level, right?
Well, now, when did this revelation come to you? I mean, it seems like everybody should know about this, because we all started talking about how you were afraid you're going to break your teeth with traditional brittle.
Oh, my gosh. I've heard so many, you know, when I first started doing the brittle, I went to a very small farmer's market, and I did a couple holiday shows, and there were so many comments from people. The first thing they say is it really brittle if it's not hard? Or, that's an oxymoron, you know? So I've heard it all. But, you know, the best way to convince people is just take a bite.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, do you still do a full bakery kind of thing with cakes and everything?
So I actually took a step back from the cakes. I have a really I have a following with my regular clients that order for their kids every single year. And so those clients I still make cakes for because I really enjoy it. You know, the caking mm-hmm. part is just, it's fun, it's a stress reliever, but not everybody can afford a custom cake. And custom cakes are very time-consuming.
A friend of, in fact, my trainer, actually, I always joke that she fattens them up with her bakery, and then she trades them to get them to slim down. But she did all these specialty cakes. I mean, she had a whole fleet of people who are really artists and doing the work. And it's so time-consuming.
Absolutely.
And then there's the delivery, too. I mean, it broke her heart when she saw delivery destroying this artwork sometimes, you know. So
absolutely. I mean, some cakes take weeks to do. And so, you know, I just didn't have the time to focus just on cakes. And plus with the candy, you can make candy and you can actually, you can pass it along to more people. And so that way you're passing that joy along to more people versus one cake, you know. So it was just a way for me to really pass along that passion that I have for baking overall. So uh-huh. I still do cakes, and I periodically post the cakes that I make for my clients on my Instagram. But if you check out my Instagram, which is just Tam Sweets, you can see all of my elaborate cakes. And the cakes that I do are like the sculpted cakes. I've had some that are motorized.
Yeah, I mean, my trainer did an upside-down wedding cake.
That's amazing.
Hangs like from a chandelier. You know, it was like a chandelier hangs, which I thought was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Because the bride and groom cutting the cake got all these crumbs all over them. I just thought it was so bizarre. And the clients loved it, absolutely loved it, you know. Something different, I guess, you know.
That's what matters, right? As long as you love it, that's what matters.
I guess. But anyhow, I mean, what is the process? Tell us how big a production do you have, for example?
So right now, it's actually just me and my husband, and so we're doing it. I actually still have a day job, and so the Sauce Brittle has just been, like I said, it's just been a year now. It's my one-year anniversary, and we are trying to find where we fit in the market because Sauce Brittle is very unique. Most people have never heard about it. Really, about like 95% of the people that I speak with one-on-one have never heard of soft brittle. And so right now it's more educating people so that way they understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So right now my production, we are located in a gluten-free commercial bakery. And
you've got to get into all that stuff too. That's just, I mean, everybody keeps expanding into specialty foods. But the list of all the requirements anymore has gotten so long. I don't know how anybody has the attention span to make them. They're gluten-free, they're this-free, they're kosher, they're blah, blah, blah. You know, it goes on and on and on. It was made
absolutely.
In a nut packing facility. I mean, it's enormously complicated now, isn't it?
It really is, and you know, a lot of people now have allergies. There's a lot of food allergies out there, so you really have to be careful. And not only food allergies, but people have special dietary needs. So my brittle, I actually offer 9 different flavors. I specialize in peanuts, cashews, hazelnuts, and I also have almonds as well. And what I heard, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, is a lot of people are plant-based or they're vegan. Or they're just watching the sugar. And so my product, I make my own nut butter. And that's what I add to the brittle. So that's what gives me that nice shortbread cookie crumble. And because I make my own nut butter, I can control the sweetness. And on top of that, my brittle is also plant-based. So now I can offer this to those people who are dairy-free or who are vegan. So, you know, and some people are just trying to eat healthy. They're not vegan. You know, they're not plant-based. They just wanted a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that is our, you know, the age that we live in now. And so I really was conscious of that when I was doing my market research and listening to what people told me. So we pride ourselves on having a treat that you just don't feel guilty after you take a bite.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can't wait to see what happens. The latest thing here is they've decided, you know, when our kids were little, the pediatricians held off on allowing nuts and certain other things with high allergy counts, not allowing it for 2-3 years. And now everybody has so many allergies that the pediatricians are switching around and saying probably the best thing you could do is get them right off the bat feeding them this stuff so they don't build up this kind of resistance to the products. You know, so you can give them peanuts. I mean, let's forget about the choking issue, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Right, right. Well, that's a really nice thing about the soft brittle is I've had kids as young as, you know, as soon as they can eat solids, eat it. And I've also had people who are 95 years old who can eat it. So you still get that nuttiness from all the nuts that I include into the brittle, but without that hard texture from a traditional brittle.
Now, I mentioned that I thought your flavor combinations were pretty sophisticated. Could you just give our listeners some ideas of the, what kinds of flavor combinations you have?
Yes, so I have several different nuts that I work with. I work with peanuts. So my peanut line is I have original peanut. That's going to be your closest to a traditional peanut brittle that you can get. But I also have a peanut brown sugar sea salt. And what makes this unique is that I actually add sea salt flakes over the top of it. You know, sea salt is really popular, if you notice. There's so many different sea salt flavors out there, right? But a lot of times they add the sea salt into the food, and so now you're just tasting something that's salty. Whereas I use sea salt flakes over the top of it, so that way when you take a bite, you get a bit of the sweetness, you get the nuttiness, and then you get a punch of saltiness from the sea salt. So you can
I wasn't just imagining this. Your process and your concepts of flavor profiles are very, very sophisticated. I mean, they're not like your average producer, I think.
That's the part that excites me. I have so many ideas, but I have to kind of rein myself in. Otherwise, I'm just going to go overboard.
Right.
But one of my newest flavors is I have a cashew toasted coconut. And you can't find this flavor out there anywhere. This is something that I just invented. It's really new. And, you know, when I proposed this flavor to my husband, he had so many doubts. He's like, there's no way that would taste good. But now it's his favorite flavor.
Yeah, we've interviewed a number of people who are partners in life as well as business. And you have to have some common taste appreciation in there somewhere. Otherwise, you'd kill each other.
That's right.
Right.
Or you just have to be very convincing.
Okay. So, all right. Now, I like one of my favorites, by the way, is the cashew. That's one of my favorites of the ones I've tried.
There's not a lot of cashew candies out there, but when there are, sometimes cashew is one of those nuts that has a very faint flavor. And so with my cashew brittle, because of that cashew butter that I produce, you can really taste the cashews. So
I've been a big fan of cashew butter for a long time. That's another thing. But it's one of the most healthful nuts around. And, that and pistachios, the other one,
Now I made cashew butter into a candy, so you don't feel as bad when you eat it, right?
Yeah. So we have the peanuts and we have the cashews. What other flavor combinations would you?
I also have an almond line. I have the almond brown sugar sea salt, and I also created a almond maple cinnamon flavor. And to me, when I take a bite into it, it kind of reminds me of an apple pie. But for some other people, it's one of those flavors that it's not just meant for the holidays. You can really eat it year-round, and it's just good with anything. Another one of my flavors, it's my chocolate hazelnut line. Now, my chocolate hazelnut line is really meant for those people who like the crunch of a brittle, because there are a lot of people out there who love that crunch.
Yeah,
and so my chocolate hazelnut line is more of a brittle crunch, but that has the chocolate and the hazelnuts. And the hazelnuts, we use local Oregon hazelnuts because we're very well known for our filbert or hazelnuts, which most people know it as.
I love hazelnuts, and I just wish they weren't so difficult to work with, having to get that skin off of them and everything.
It is, but you know, when you roast them, they just smell amazing. And with the chocolate hazelnut line, because of that crunch, they actually, it's great to eat with a little bit of coffee. Eat it like a biscotti and just stir it in your coffee and take a bite.
Neat.
Yeah, chocolate and hazelnut goes really well with coffee. It also goes really well with red wine.
Right.
So, and I have a chocolate hazelnut with toasted coconut, which is really unique. But it goes really well together. Those flavors just blend really well.
Now, how big are your batches of this? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of scale.
Oh, so... really, my number one seller are the cashew flavors, because people didn't realize they like cashew until they try it. Most people, everybody I've talked to when I sample my brittle, they are like, oh, I'm a peanut person. I'm not a cashew person. But then when they try the cashew, they kind of get converted. So the cashew line is mostly my most popular flavor, and so I produce much more of the cashew. But the peanut line is kind of the second time, my second best seller. And so everything is done in small batches, and it's all done by hand. With brittle, you have to work quickly because it's hot. It comes out, and especially when you add a nut butter to it, is that it actually cools faster by adding the nut butter to it. And so you have to work quickly, and you have to hand spread this brittle. Otherwise, if you don't hand spread it, you're just going to get this really thick mound.
Oh,
and so, yeah, it has to be done in small batches. And so I make my brittle, you know, basically to order. So when I get orders in, I make my brittle. So it doesn't sit there for very long. Because I would like my customers to be able to have it for as long as possible. Even though most likely they'll probably finish it that day. I want to make sure that everybody has a really fresh batch. And so we always make sure to make everything in small batches, and it's all done by hand. And we package by hand as well. So that way we
can... Oh, do you really?
We do, yeah. So,
well, that kind of limits how much you can scale up this product line, though, definitely.
You know, as far as scaling up, you'd be surprised at how many companies out there still make everything in small batches and still do things by hand, because it's not about necessarily scaling up so much. It's about the quality of your product, because when you have a good quality product, then you get the customers coming in and they recognize the quality of your product, and then you have more demand. And so I'm not just about scaling up and getting all my product out there as many as possible. I want to make sure that when my product does get out there, that everybody enjoys it and will come back.
Now, do you have like a store? Do you have like a storefront, or I mean, how do people come and get some?
So I don't have a storefront, but I do have retail partners here in Oregon. You can find me in all
it's shops selling other kinds of food-related items.
Yes, I'm typically in the artisan food section with like all other baked goods, and you can also find all of my flavors on my website, which is tamsweets.com. I have retailers, like I said, in Oregon, and I also sell at the farmer's market, and I sell at a lot of the shows in the area as well. Because, you know, soft brittle, like I said, is very unique. People don't understand it until they taste it. So I really need to get out there and have people try it. And once they do, then they're convinced.
You go to that great farmer's market at Portland State?
I go to the one out in Beaverton. So Beaverton is just a suburb outside of Portland.
Sure, where Nike's headquartered.
Yes, yes. That's a great, it's actually one of the biggest farmers market in the Portland metro area. Portland State is probably the biggest, and then Beaverton is right up there as well.
You said that you have so many ideas. You dream of new flavors. And, you know, I do that with pesto. And when you talk about the cashews, I never knew what to do because I don't use a lot of sage, but it grows like crazy, and it always comes back. So I paired sage up with cashews, and it was a very interesting combination.
You know, cashews is a very versatile nut. It doesn't have a real strong flavor, but it takes on other flavors really well.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the idea of cashews in a pesto I thought was interesting. Oh, well. So, yeah.
I think it sounds delicious.
It is. It really is. That's a creative outlet that I found, is making combinations of herbs with pesto so that the herbs don't go to waste. So, anyhow. Well, what's next, Tam? I mean, what are you going to aim for next? More flavors or what?
So, my goal really is to educate people on what Soft Brittle is, let people know that I'm here. I would like to be able to branch out and extend my product to other states. And, you know, the only way to do that is to really put myself out there and have people try it. So I'm working with other retailers. I'm hoping to expand out and also try some new flavors as well. I have some ideas on new flavors that are coming out because I want to modernize the idea of brittle more. You know, people now have very sophisticated palates, and so I want to be able to really experiment with those flavors and interest people in trying new things and not just, you know, continue with tradition. So that's really my goal, is to kind of branch out outside of Oregon, reach more people, and have them understand what soft brittle is and recognize that we have that available. And, you know, you don't have to continue with the old. Try something different.
Yeah.
You know, well, like our slogan says, you know, our slogan is soft brittle. It doesn't have to be hard.
Right.
I don't even want to go where that one's going.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be a life slogan too, right? It doesn't have to be hard. We don't have to make it hard.
Well, Tam Truong, I just think you have a wonderful product. And I hope you continue to throw your creativity into the ring there with your sophisticated flavor combinations. And also, you have to devote a lot of time to advertising and spreading the word at this point. So I guess the fancy food shows are probably one of the best ways of doing that, huh?
Yes, we were actually at the Winter Fancy Food Show in Vegas, and one of the things that I enjoyed so much is that most of the people that I talked to never heard of soft brittle, and they were convinced, and that was my goal. It's like I wanted to be that person that convinced them, and I wanted to be the person that says, this is what soft brittle is, and you got to keep on coming back, because this is the new world. And
well,
so we just had made so many great connections.
Yeah, I love that show. We usually go to the one on the East Coast, which is huge. But it's getting out of hand. There's so many products. I don't know. You can't even cover it in 3 days. No.
Yeah,
but anyway,
exactly.
Tammy, and your adopted country is so delighted you're with us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here, too.
Just keep on taking the tablets.
Okay.
Well, thank you for talking to us, Tam. And again, our listeners, make sure you check out Tam's Sweet and Soft Brittle, and you'll just be amazed at the flavors, and they're so accessible, you don't break your teeth.
but don't come to our house for them, because we already ate ours.
We did, didn't we?
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was fun talking to you. So anyhow, keep us posted.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you.